Okay, top of page 94. We're not talking about religious. We're talking about spiritual. And so it says, outline the program of action. I've said it every week. This is a program of action. Explaining how you made a self-appraisal, step 4. How you straightened out your past, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And why you're now endeavoring to be helpful to him, step 12. It's important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part, a life-saving part in my own recovery, in your own recovery. So when I'm telling somebody, the reason I'm doing this is to help me stay sober. The reason I'm helping you is to help me. He may be helping you more than you're helping him. And I have told sponsees that hundreds of times. You don't know how much you're helping me. And they go, what are you talking about? I said, just by you being here, and just by you asking the questions, and just by you following some simple directions, you're helping me stay sober. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those paradoxes, just like, you know, the first step, surrender to win. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's, I got to give it away to keep it. You know, the paradoxes. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you that you only hope that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. So what we're saying is, you don't owe me anything. You're under no obligation to me. I just hope that you'll try to help other alcoholics when you finally have that spiritual experience from the first 11 steps. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he's not under any pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. It's up to him. You shouldn't be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you've helped him. I've had plenty of people walk off. Plenty of people, and I don't chase them. My sponsor says, if they're not calling you, don't chase them, because they're not ready. And if they're not ready, you're going to spoil a chance that somebody else might have later on by trying to go find them. Now, I might make one phone call just to find out, you know, did you find another sponsor? And here recently, I've had 3 sponsees down in Orlando call me and say, I need another sponsor. And I say, you're absolutely correct. And I want you to pray on it. And I know some good sponsors who would help you, but it's got to be your decision. All 3 of them so far who have gotten face-to-face sponsors, because I've been out there so long, all 3 of them picked the person that I thought would be best to help them. All 3 of them. That's not a coincidence. That's a God shot to me right there. Because one of the ones is a guy who couldn't stay sober, and he was George Zimmerman's number one spokesman while he was drunk. He was on another run, and he was drunk, and he was defending George Zimmerman all over the news. They flew him up to be on the Today Show, and he talked about how the guy was defending himself, all this stuff. And then he got in a wreck, drunk, and he came back in. And he's the only one I've ever stood in the parking lot and screamed at. And he started, I screamed at him. He looked so horrible. He just looked like death warmed over. And I said, you're going to die. 2 weeks after he started working with me, his second son had a DUI fatality. His only other son died.
Damn.
And he did not pick up a drink. And he hasn't had a drink in 14 months. And he called me the other day and he said, because I tell him to share that story, because it's a powerful story, that for 15 years he came in and out, and that even when his second son died, he didn't have to have a drink. And he called me and he said, and I told that story and I went to lunch with this guy, and it's the guy who I had already decided that if my sponsor passes away, I want him as my sponsor. And I said, absolutely. Because he talks a lot about surrender. And that's what this guy needs. So, it works. He's not under any obligation to call me. If he wants to call it off, that's fine. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. I tell people when they ask me to sponsor them, you know, I have certain qualifications that I ask them. And one of them is I'll sponsor you, but I'm not your friend. If I become your friend through sponsorship, that's a bonus. But I'll take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll show you what I've done and what I do to stay sober. And if we become friends, that'll be great. And I've had plenty of guys look at me and go, why are you saying that? I said, because I go to friends' funerals. And if you happen to be one of those ones that dies, I may not want to come to your funeral. I may not want to. You know, I don't go to everybody's funeral. But I go to friends' funeral. So it kind of makes people look at me like, you know, oh, maybe I don't want him to sponsor me. You know? But I'm not here to be a friend. I'm here to help you save your life. Just like somebody saved my life. You know? And he wasn't very nice to me at first. And I have no problem telling people in the very beginning, you can put me on your four-step resentment list as the number one resentment, because by the time we get there, you may not like me very much. But if you're still working with me, then put me on that list if you want to. I don't have a problem with it. Better to give a resentment than to get one. I don't try to give resentments, but it just comes out sometimes like that. It's that humor I talked about. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. That is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. We talk about desperation. You know, and if I'm telling him how hopeless and helpless he is without a spiritual way of life and working this program of action, he's probably going to keep coming, and he's probably going to keep following some directions. All right? It says suggestions. I call them directions. It says your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all of the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning requires discussion with other people. That's fourth and fifth step. It says not to contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does. But you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken the actions. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, it says here, lend him your copy of this book. And I have buy him a copy of this book. I'm not giving my book away. My book's way too important to me. It's got too much stuff underlined and outlined, and I'm not going to lend him this copy. But I have three copies in my car, so I can lend him one of those. Or I'll buy him a book. Unless your friend, on top page 95, unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, don't wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he is likely to say, "You rushed him. You rushed him." All right? That's because he's not looking at himself. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. All right? So I'm not a reformist. I'm not against alcohol. I'm not against church. I'm not grabbing church down anybody's face. I'm not on a crusade. But I am passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous. I hate to tell you that. It saved my life. And so I am passionate about it. And people see that passion sometimes. Sometimes they call me a thumper, and I don't care. And then it goes on to say, never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. I've heard it say that an alcoholic's the only one that'll be laying in the gutter that can look up and look down on somebody. You know? And that was me. That was me. I was judging people all the time until I got in the program and learned that I don't have the power to judge. It says, simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspections. The kit of spiritual tools are the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. After the big book, then it's the 12 and 12. And then it's language of the heart. And then AA comes of age. And then it's Dr. Bob and the good old timers. And then it says Bill sees it. Those are all the spiritual kit. Those are in my spiritual kit. Show him how they work for you. Now read that first word. It doesn't say tell him. So a lot of times People are watching me because I need to show them what this program's done, not just tell them. I'm trying to work with a new guy, but if he sees me telling him all about spirituality and then he watched me go down on the trail and pick up a hooker, that's not really going to work, is it? I need to be showing him that I'm living a spiritual life. Offering friendship and fellowship, tell him that if he wants to get well, you'll do anything to help. Anything to help. Now, they do some things back in 1939 that I don't do. All right. One thing I don't do is I don't take a wet drunk into my house. They did back then. They found out through experience that some of that didn't work. A guy committed suicide in Bill's kitchen. I don't lend money. You know, it tells us not to be lending money because all we're doing is buying a guy another drink. All right. I have given people money, but I don't lend it. If I give you money because you're down on your luck and you need something to eat, I'm giving it to you. I'm not expecting it back. So there's a difference between giving somebody a hand up or lending them something, expecting something in return. Tell him that you'll do anything to help. Excuse me. If he's not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act only as his banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more. If he doesn't die, you just have to stop working with people sometimes. If they're wanting you to be their banker, if they're wanting you to be their, I'm drunk and I'm going to whine and cry, I'm going to hang up on you and tell you to call me in the morning when you're sober. I'll talk to somebody on a hotline call that's drunk. I'll talk to him and listen to him for about 15 minutes, and then I ask the question, do you want to go to detox? Well, you know, do you want to go to detox? That's a yes or no answer. Well, no, not right now. Okay, I've got to go. I've got another call coming in, I'm sorry. I'm not going to sit there and listen to somebody whine and cry over and over on the phone, drunk. But if he says yes, then I'm going to get another alcoholic, we're going to go pick him up, we're going to take him to detox if he'll go. All right? If he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. Now, I'll ask people to read the book. I give assignments because I want them to go through and study the book. I don't want them just to read it. But I will ask them to go ahead and read it. If they've got time and they're out of a job and their life's spinning out of control, what better thing to do than read the book? I got people who get newly sober and they call me up at night and they say, God, I can't sleep. I say, start reading the book. It's one of the best NyQuils in the world. It's the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you can't sleep, start reading the book. Read the book over and over. It's a textbook. It's to be studied and referred back to. Okay. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God of his understanding, the desire must come from within. If he is to find God, the desire must come from inside of him. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked with us. We merely have an approach that worked with alcoholism. But if he wants to go to church and he thinks that he can stop by going to church, I have seen people do that. I know a person who is a minister who says all the steps don't need to be done. He's 30 years sober. He's a minister in a church, but he doesn't think you need to do all the steps. I disagree. I disagree greatly. But I don't argue. I don't argue with him at all. I mean, he's ministering, you know, maybe it works for him. We don't have a monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that works with us. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common and that you'd like, in any case, to be friendly. And let it go at that. So if somebody says, I'm going a different way, I'm going a different direction, that's fine. You can do that. I got no problem with that. And it's top page 96. Says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. And this I've got highlighted. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. In how it works, it tells you there's two type of people who aren't going to get this program. There are those who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple way of life. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. Now it goes on, and this happened to me. I mean, my first seven or eight people that I worked with all got drunk, you know? And I went to my sponsor and I'm like, God, what am I doing wrong? And he just a loving man, he just shook his head and he says, what part of Bill's story did you not get? And it says right here, Bill's story. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. So if Bill had kept working with those drunks that weren't getting sober, he would have never worked with Dr. Bob. He'd have been so tied up chasing down drunks that didn't want this program, that cannot or will not completely give themselves. Suppose now you're making your second visit to the man. This is all, I mean, up to this point, we're just talking about our first visit. We're talking about talking to his family, finding out about him, meeting with him, talking about our drinking, talking about a way out that we know about, which is what the book almost was called, and our spiritual approach. And now we're talking about, okay, now we're on our second visit to the man. And he said he's read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. That's great. The guy read the book and he's ready to go forward. Man, that's a desperate alcoholic. He has seen his bottom and he understands what's going to happen. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. This is one of the first times it talks about advice, you know. But the advice you're going to be giving him is work in the program of action that's outlined in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Don't get your feelings hurt if somebody says, I don't really want to talk with you about this. I'm going to talk to somebody else. Okay, I planted a seed. You know, my job is a farmer. I plant seeds. And in the first step, when it says my life's unmanageable, when I admitted that, that means that I no longer have the ability to question. So why is a management question? I'm in labor. I'm to be out there carrying the message, not asking why, God, why did my brother die, God? What? That just doesn't come into play. I'm not in management. And if he wants to go to somebody else, I have no problem. Like I said, guys down in Florida right now, I'm cutting every one of them loose. They can get another sponsor. They need it. Most of the guys got less than 2 years sobriety. They need more face-to-face contact. And they really do. And I am not offended when somebody says, Jim, I'm thinking about changing sponsors. I'm like, great. At least you're not thinking about drinking. You know? And it goes on, and we got a lot of them down there. I don't know how many up here, but he may be broke and homeless. And if he is, you might try to help him about getting a job or give him a little financial assistance. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. Perhaps you will want to take the man into your home for a few days. Okay? But be sure you use discretion. Be sure you use discretion. The reason I don't take a drunk into my house is I was a drunk. I know what drunks do. When he leaves, some of my stuff's going out the door with him. Okay? I know from my personal experience, So I use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. If somebody's trying to use me, I can see that. An alcoholic can see through a fresh alcoholic real easy. You know, I can see if somebody's going to be using me. And the answer is going to be no. I'm not going to be used. I'm going to do anything I can to help you. I'll help you if you don't have an education. I'll help try to find you where you can get a GED. You know, if I know of a job available and I know you're serious and I know that you're doing the deal, I'll give you a kind word to help you get a job. But if you're not serious, you know, I need to leave you alone. Back then, they used to bring them into their homes. And you know, Bill did that a lot. And Lois would come home from work. Bill didn't have a job for years. Lois would come home. The house would be full of drunks. They'd be eating all of her food. She's the one making money. She really was not happy for a while there. But she was thrilled that Bill wasn't drinking. She was thrilled at that. And she got mad at him. She got mad at him because Alcoholics Anonymous and the Oxford Group helped Bill stay sober. And when they wrote the movie, when Bill Borchette wrote the movie, he had interviewed Lois for thousands of hours. And it was called When Love Is Not Enough, the Lois Wilson story about Al-Anon. That Lois had finally gotten so mad at Bill one day that she threw a shoe at him before she realized that, you know what? Okay. All these drunks are in my house. They're taking up my food. They're taking up space. But my husband's sober. He's not dying. And he's helping other people. She was upset because all of her love couldn't keep him sober. You know? Frothy emotional appeal. Permit that and you only harm him. If you're giving any money, you're giving him shelter, you got to stand on his own 2 feet. You will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. Okay? Top of page 97, it says, never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you're doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of my recovery, of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day, if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money or your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected, which is what Lois felt. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. There's another reason not to take a drunk into your house right there. And you may have to fight with him if he's violent. Well, I just would not fight with anybody, so I'm not bringing a drunk home. Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. That ain't happening. Okay? I ain't doing that. That ain't happening. They did it back then. Okay? They got sedatives and they administered them. Bob and Bill both, in their stories, talks about mixing sedatives and alcohol. So were they dual addicted? Probably. But I'm not administering any sedatives to anybody. That's done by medical professionals. And I'm an EMT. That doesn't matter. You know, I'm just not going to do it.
You can hit them on the head with something.
A hammer. It says another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you'll have to meet such conditions. And occasionally back then they have to meet such conditions. We have a pretty firm rule in our group at Central, and we're a club. It's a clubhouse. We have 5 meetings a day, but they're all Central meetings. We don't call the police on drunks. all right? They have a guy who works for the club. And if somebody is violent in a meeting and violently outburst or throwing chairs around, a couple of guys will ask him to go outside, and they'll go outside with him and try to talk him down off the ledge. But we won't call the police. The guy who's running the coffee bar for the club has authority to call the police and trespass him off the property. We are not going to kick that person out of Alcoholics Anonymous, but he might be trespassed for 30 or 60 days from coming back on that property. But there's 129 groups in Central Florida, and so we're not throwing him out of AA. But if he can't, we have to create a safe environment in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what. So you can't allow people to be violent. Asking a drunk to leave a meeting because he's drunk and he's not doing anything besides sitting there and he's drunk is absolutely wrong. Mm-hmm. But if he gets violent, a couple of guys need to take him outside. If she gets violent, a couple of girls need to take her outside. I've always felt that, and I still feel that way. But if they're not available, then we had a girl, one of my best female friends down in Central Florida. She's got about 26 years right now, named Suzanne. She would yell and scream in meetings, drunker than hell. And they would pick the chair up with her in it and take it outside and set it in the parking lot and allow her still to have her chair and yell and scream in the parking lot. I love that girl so much. She is such a hoot now. All right, it says, we seldom allow an alcoholic to live in our homes for long at a time. It is not good for him, and it sometimes creates serious complications in the family. That's why. You know, back then they would take in a drunk, they would try to sober him up, and then they would, you know, get him a place. Go to the mission. They had lots of missions back then. The Salvation Armies. Because I'm not going to create complications in my family trying to help you. I'm going to try to help you. And maybe if you're not drinking, you can spend the night, a couple nights on the couch until we can find you a bed someplace in a rehab, in a halfway house, in a Salvation Army. But you're not living with me. I didn't marry you. I'm here to help you. I'm not here to marry you. All right? And I'm not going to create complications in my family. Though an alcoholic does not respond, there is no reason why you should neglect his family. You should continue to be friendly to them. The family should be offered your way of life. Should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there is a much better chance that the head of the family will recover. And that back then, men were the head of the family. That isn't always the case nowadays. But it's still, you're offering them, the family, the same opportunity that they're offering the drunk, to live on spiritual principles. Get them an Al-Anon book. Ask them to go to some Al-Anon meetings. And if the guy's not responding, then it's up to them what they're going to do about it. And even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. So if the family's going to Al-Anon and the drunk is still coming home drunk, things are going to be better in the family because at least they're practicing a spiritual way of life. At least they're trying. And if he sees that, there's a better chance that he's going to get well. And this is what was going on back in 39, and it's still going on today. All right, where am I at? For the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. Give me money, give me a place to live, but I'm not going to stop drinking. I don't think so, homie. That's not going to happen in my world. All right?
That's the truth.
Yet we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these very things when such action is warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think it's not. So what they're saying is, if somebody is really trying, we may give them a little bit of charity. We may give them a little bit of money. We may let them sleep on the couch if they're really trying. It's not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. So the minute our work is on a service plane, he's not looking for the real answer. He's not looking for the spiritual answer. This is not a part of a spiritual program. This entire program, to me, was divinely inspired and is spiritual in all nature. And so we don't give him all this assistance and deny him the chance that he needs to find his ultimate authority himself. He clamors for this and that, claiming that he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. And here's something you ought to highlight. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. I'm going to say that again. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. And he goes on to say, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and he clean house. And Dr. Bob wrote, and help others. That's how simple this program came down to. Trust God, clean house, help others. And I'm gonna read this next paragraph and then we'll stop. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparations as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principle by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Because a lot of times by now, there ain't no home for him to go back to. Though his family, but I've seen families reunite after a year or 2 years. I've seen people get back together because they've gotten sober, they've stayed sober, and they're helping others. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstrations. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover that they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Helpfulness and friendliness. After they have seen tangible results, the family will perhaps want to go along. These things will come to pass naturally in good time provided, however, the alcoholic continues to demonstrate that he can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does. Of course, we all fall much below this standard many times, but we must try to repair the damage immediately lest we pay the penalty by a spree. So what Bill is telling us there is that as long as we're trying to demonstrate A, that we're sober, B, that we're being considerate, and that we're helpful, regardless of what anybody thinks, if we're demonstrating that, the family is going to see it and they're probably going to want to be a part of your life again. Sometimes, like me, I took it too far and I have a former wife. I used to call it an ex-wife. I call her a former wife now. Who's going to be very unhappy very soon. Because she just got her last child support check. But it's one of the greatest things in my life that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and then we got a divorce, that my sponsor said, you have a responsibility to your son until he turns 19 years old. And I have never missed a child support payment. I have been in bankruptcy. I have had to get a loan. I have had to sell things that I didn't want to sell. I have never missed a child support payment. Now, I'm not patting myself on the back for that, but what it is I kept my word. I kept my word to the judge, to my former wife, to my son. I kept my word. The biggest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is it's taught me to keep my word. So I don't say yes to everything. I'll think about it. I'll try. Maybe are all acceptable words to use. But if I say yes, I'm going to do it because I'm going to keep my word. And I've said yes to some things that after an hour of reflection, I said, I ain't going to do that. And you know what? I do it anyway because I said I would. Because that's what's inside of me now. I say I'm going to be here at 3 o'clock. It's going to take an act of God, an accident, or something to keep me from being here at 3 o'clock every Sunday until we get done. All right? But I'm going to stop right there. And it, yeah.
I got a lot of ideas, Jim. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I think God understands when I say I'll be here at 3 o'clock, but really inside I know it's probably going to be 10 after 3.
God understands. I don't understand why you can't be here at 3 o'clock when you say you're going to be here at 3 o'clock.
Wait, no, no.